since this has been launched like 13 months ago or so, people have come to us with also with different motivations than just looking at our website. So like, for example, I had people reaching out from a project similar to Numerize Signals, and they wanted from my website to tell them when to buy and when to sell Ocean Protocol based on the information I have on the data assets. So their idea was that, let's say, if the data market in total kind of crashes, then this would be an indication that also Ocean should be sold or bought, depending on what you want to bet on. So that was one very interesting use case that we hadn't anticipated.
Welcome to the Ocean Missions Campfire Podcast, where we explore Ocean Protocol, Web3, and blockchain data.
I'm Scott Millad, and today we're going to be speaking with Tim Delvenschitz, the founder and creator of RugpullIndex.com. The Rug Pull Index monitors the Ethereum blockchain to identify the risks of getting rug pulled when you stake your tokens inside data token liquidity pools.
I have worked with Tim over the last couple of months, so I have a bit of a background around the project. But this is basically just a conversation to learn more about the project. We're going to assume that people listening have either heard about it or haven't heard about it at all. So it should cover that sort of that broad area. And yeah, so basically, I was just wondering if you could start off by telling us a bit about yourself and how you became involved with Ocean Protocol.
Hello, my name is Tim. How I became involved with Ocean Protocol, it's a bit of a longer story. I think after university, when I did my Bachelor of Computer Science, I was looking for a job in Berlin around like 2015. And yeah, I was already interested kind of in like applications building on some kind of like blockchain integration. And so I was looking like in Berlin specifically for an employer where I could learn more about blockchain. And yeah, I had been previously like on the Bitcoin Talk forum, also doing a bunch of like freelance and always getting scammed and whatever, and not like basically my work didn't get paid. But ultimately I ended up working for a company called Ascribe. And that in a way is still, I think, largely the same company that runs Ocean Protocol today. It's just that this company kind of pivoted once from Ascribe, which was digital art, to BigchainDB, which is a blockchain database. And then finally, in the latest pivot, they pivoted in 2017 to Ocean Protocol. So I was really an early employee of Ocean Protocol. I started out as a front-end developer there at Ascribe, and we did very similar things that then people are doing today with NFTs, so registering digital art. And I ended up being the product manager of BigchainDB, this blockchain database. And when we came to the pivot that went from BigchainDB to Ocean, I helped prepare the token launch. I was also, I think, one of the people behind arguing for launching a token within the company, because I think at that point it was fairly controversial to do that. Yeah, but then I wanted to do like my own things in 2018, so I quit basically, and I started exploring more the Ethereum ecosystem, also did a bunch of like freelance projects. And yeah, I basically fast forward, I guess, 2 more years almost after I quit, I saw that Ocean had launched their marketplace, as also we, like, funnily enough, as we intended it already to be working in 2018, like really much of the ideas that were like informally discussed in the company, I think, were really implemented later in this automated market maker design. Although I think we used to call like automated market makers largely, I think we're calling them bonding curves still, and there's like a tiny detail also on, I think, how these work differently. But yeah, when I saw that they had deployed this marketplace for data, I got really interested, and I started Rugpull Index. So when Ocean Protocol launched their data marketplace, like the version 3, so to speak, there were rug pulls happening. So a rug pull, in a way, is a financial fraud where, let's say, you set up a project and you advertise it with a roadmap and you say, yeah, we're going to do like the, all these awesome things in the future and so on. And you maybe you have some like sales website where you sell a token or an NFT or any kind of financial asset. And yeah, once you have finalized the sale and maybe you have made a bunch of money also through it, then you quote unquote pull the rug. And what it means is that either you just don't do anything of the promised things on the roadmap, so you just quote unquote exit scam, or another way I think of pulling a rug would be that maybe you kept some of those tokens that you sold, maybe you kept the reserve, and now what you are doing is you are selling this reserve on the market in a very unfairly priced way, so you are just dumping it on the market. And yeah, in both cases you are metaphorically like pulling the rug under someone. And yeah, that happened for those rug pulls. They happened for Ocean Protocol, especially in the beginning. I wasn't even quite there to witness them at first, but I saw an issue on GitHub where they were just simply outlining the problem, and I thought, ah, this is actually quite interesting as a problem to solve, because it seems it's not only applicable to the Ocean Protocol, but as I said, I think also the exit scam is very similar. It's, yeah, it's really just one class of financial fraud that can happen in like myriad ways somehow. And yeah, so what I did then, since I'm a freelancer, I can allocate most of my free time as I want. I just went heads down, coded a thing. Like, I think my first prototype was simply an Excel spreadsheet. And kind of the idea that I had for Ocean Protocol was that a rug pull can only happen, and that is still the intuition that is that rug pull index is built up, that rug pull can only happen if there is not a diversified interest of investors. So what I mean by that is that maybe there is only one really big investor that has one certain interest, and not many investors that have like a diverse set of interests. For example, in the US stock market on the S&P 500, I think there are so many different people trading that asset with so many different motivations that one single event or one single thing happening, like an event happening, will not crash the whole market because everyone else somehow thinks differently about the value of that asset. If everyone would be thinking alike, like let's say everyone would say the S&P 500 is really like a valuable asset because the sun shines in California, and suddenly the sun wouldn't shine in California, then probably everyone would sell and the price would go to zero. But since that is not the case, there is some sort of like robustness also in pricing. And that is actually a good thing. So mathematically, you can capture something like this in a Gini index. And the Gini index, in a way, is a mathematical formula that just calculates the statistical income like over a population. And so the idea of rug pull index was, if we have many different investors in a pool of a data set that have all different interests, this is just an assumption, of course, but if we have like many investors and we can measure, for example, the inequality in a pool, so whether only one person controls it or many, like 10 people control it, then we can also make like a statement about the safety of the market and also of the health of the market. Because the other option at that time when rug pull index didn't exist was to maybe, let's say, do a manual due diligence check. So what people did, I think also DataVale was one of them and others, they basically, for all the assets on Ocean Protocol, they bought them. So they put their own money, they bought these assets. Then they looked at the data and they said, ah, this is a really, you know, a very valuable piece of data, so we should price it higher, or this is like trash, so we should price it lower. But that, I think, in an open market where there can always be change, that, like where there's always like a constant change going on, and also where, yeah, prices can be quite high. Like already today, I think in the Ocean Marketplace, for example, there's one data set that costs 40,000 euros, I think. This way of manually doing due diligence becomes kind of cumbersome and, yeah, just not very, I think it's not very efficient or very tough to automate. And so I thought, actually, I mean, already we are rating financial assets based on their market's health. And the S&P 500, in fact, is a good example of this, where the S&P 500 that contains like the 500 most prosperous companies in the US, it picks the ranking, so which one is first, second, and third, and so on, it picks it by the market capitalization of each individual company. So I think, I'm not sure, but I think the top company is Apple, and that's simply because they have over $1 trillion market cap, and then the, you know, second is, I don't know, Alphabet, which is Google, the third is Facebook, and so on and so forth, until you go to the 500th, which is some like company that I definitely don't know, but which has a much lower market cap than Apple or Google. Yeah, and so Rugpull Index is basically that if you open the website today and you look at the table that is presented to you under the graph, then you can see that there is that we are giving a score for each data set that we call the rating. And this rating is being formed by the inequality factor, that is the Gini index that I just mentioned. And a secondary factor that we are using is the total amount of liquidity in the quote-unquote order book or automated market maker. And with these two factors, essentially, we are giving a rating. And as you can see, for example, today, and also for the last few days, I think, or even months, the top product was from Innovation Atelier, the products on Amazon.com, and we are given like the best rating of the day, which is a 7.1%, even though they have a very high rate of inequality, but they also have, relatively speaking to all the other assets on the ocean market and the big data protocol market, they have a very, like a lot of liquidity. So that's I think why they are on.
One of the things you touched on earlier was, you know, this idea that the data tokens or the data assets inside of Ocean Protocol, you know, they're all sort of operating on the same foundation or the same formula as many other assets. And it was one of the things that was interesting to you. So inside of Ocean Protocol, all of the data tokens are essentially ERC-20 based. So is that, you know, what are your plans for the future of Rugpull Index? Is this something that's going to start playing more of a role, you know, this interoperability with ERC-20? Or what are some of the things that you sort of have in mind for the future?
Yeah, I mean, we started out really, I would say, naively with this project. The Ocean DAO was not even there yet. And so I was really doing this as a side project because I thought it was quite interesting to rate data assets based on market qualities. And I'm pretty sure I'm still the only person in the world in this like super weird niche. But I think it makes total sense. Like the way we have started to rate ERC-20 tokens based on the market health, I think it has been done, of course, by other platforms. So yeah, classic examples are the CoinMarketCap and also CoinGecko. But they are just looking at the total market capitalization of the token, let's say. And now I'm getting back to your question. It would totally make sense to look at other, as you correctly pointed out, ERC-20 tokens, because I think it would just be interesting. Let's say I would love to know the top asset based on market health on the Ethereum network, you know, given all of the pools that exist, like Uniswap, SushiSwap, Balance and so on. So I think in the beginning we were quite naive, like in doing this project, because we thought, yeah, okay, this is a way to solve Rugpull Index, to solve rug pulls on the Ocean Protocol, right? Because what it allows you to do now, the idea is that the user comes to our website because they want to, let's say, speculate in data assets, and so our website gives them an overview of the data assets that are really trustworthy. And in fact, if you look at it, I mean, we are only listing 40 data sets, and then the rating rapidly drops off. So there's really only a few, I think, data sets that we think are really good compared to many that are not that great, I think. The idea was that kind of like we are allowing investors, but also, yeah, data scientists that want to consume data, we are allowing them to make an informed buying or investing decision in what assets to invest in. And that, of course, I think it applies for any kind of ERC20 token. And we want to expand our crawler, and we want to, maybe one day in the future, we are able to really track all of the, first of all, I think, balancer pools, and then maybe we can extend to Uniswap pools, to SushiSwap pools, and so on. That is what I think, you know, the dimension that a user visits our website, that seems to have been the initial idea for the project. And that's also, I think, what we are still framing ourselves as, in a way, as like a knowledge base or whatever. But since this has been launched like 13 months ago or so, people have come to us with different motivations than just looking at our website. So, like, for example, I had people reaching out from a project similar to Numerize Signals, and they wanted from my website to tell them when to buy and when to sell Ocean Protocol based on the information I have on the data assets. So their idea was that, let's say, if the data market in total kind of crashes, then this would be an indication that also Ocean should be sold or bought, depending on what you want to bet on. So that was one very interesting use case that we hadn't anticipated. And then recently, through a conversation with the CEO of Paraswap, I think there was another interesting dimension discovered, which is that for everyone that is doing routing on automated market makers, so 1inch, Paraswap, and others, I think even like MetaMask might do this. For all of them, it might also be interesting to get a heuristic on which of the pools that exist, let's say, on the Ethereum network are trustworthy or have this, yeah, quote-unquote, high diversity of interest from liquidity providers. Because quite clearly, you want to route a payment through a pool that is safe and where the liquidity is not rug pulled or in any other way kind of manipulated. Yeah, you always want to suggest to the user to use pools that are non-malicious and do what they promise to do, so to speak. So yeah, I'm not sure how much the inequality and the liquidity factor really plays as a qualitative metric for those products, if how relevant it is, because it might not be relevant enough. But I think the principle that we are using, that we are looking at basically pools and we are rating them based on some factors, I think that is at least for very nominal-minded people, and is I think quite interesting. And yeah, it's interesting that there is like different use cases for such a simple website.
It's a very interesting point. I mean, as you said, basically rug pull index started out as just, you know, putting some data into an Excel spreadsheet or whatever it was, and then over time, obviously, you've kind of hardened that product and then also updated the front end. But just even the fact that you're going in and looking at on-chain data and highlighting specific pieces of information, you know, and it's starting to just open up a whole world of new use cases is definitely something that's very interesting. Did you want to mention anything about the rug pulled network?
Yeah, so like the rug pull index, the project has been since February. It has been sponsored by the Ocean DAO, and I think it became kind of clear in the beginning that building such a website comes with its own challenges. I mean, one of them is, for example, that the .com domain, the server, like all of this, the bills are paid by me. And then also the backend, I have decided to leave it closed source, so it's not actually available on GitHub. But this came with its own challenges when in July or August, we started onboarding developers through kind of this blockchain-based process of working together. So we have a markdown file on GitHub that basically outlines the process of how you can work together with us. And it's very similar to, let's say, Gitcoin, where you can create bounties. In the same way, you can come to our project, you can read through the handbook document on GitHub, you make a proposal to us on what you want to work on, and you send it to me, and I have received since many months like money from the ocean now, and if I accept the proposal, then you are good to go to start developing some feature or something, and in the end you will get paid in like cryptocurrency. So it's a kind of like this regular bounty based approach towards recruiting or paying people. And I had used this process already in a job that I had done before at a project called LeapDAO, where we did almost the exact same things, except the money was held, like the money to be dispersed was held in a Gnosis safe, like a multi-signature wallet. And then everyone had the opportunity to just create GitHub issues. There was a process that would allow you to veto any kind of bounty, but if it wasn't vetoed, then you could start working on it and there would be somewhat of a guarantee in the end that if you had done the work and the pull request was merged, then actually you would also be able to get that money. And that had been like in 2019. For me, that was one of my main sources of income. So I had like no employment contract or anything like this. I was just like really working for a DAO. It was very weird. But what I always liked about this process was like there was a very low threshold of entry. And it also through that, the kind of people that we onboarded were like super interesting because they were like, yeah, just really entrepreneurial, and they were like really living and breathing crypto. And also because we didn't have any interviews or like any kind of like gatekeeping on who could work with us, I think the level of diversity of the contributors that we had was extremely high. So I got to work with people that I would have never otherwise, I think, would have worked with. And so I wanted to replicate this, or let's say I almost replicated this process, except for that I'm still gatekeeping on Rugpull Index, accepting the proposals myself and managing the money and so on. But one of the problems with this approach that I now had to learn was that if you have closed source software, then it's really not possible to have an external contributor contribute to the project in this like blockchain bounty fashion, because, you know, in a traditional environment, what we would do is I would start talking with my lawyer and we would set up a contract, and then, you know, that is like, there would be like this NDA style, so non-disclosure agreement style contract where I would say, yeah, I'm sharing the closed source software with you, and that means you on one side you will be able to work on it, but if you kind of you should never distribute it publicly or like use it for your own benefit, like host it for your own benefit or whatever. But in like the, let's say in the strict, in a strict interpretation of working with people online through cryptocurrencies, this kind of working with the like actual law in a country is not possible, because essentially I don't really necessarily know my contributors. I mean, I know their names on Discord and so on, but I don't know where they live. I don't know where they are from. I'm also not super interested in that either. So we are paying ourselves through invoicing of request network, and actually that works quite well. So, but then, of course, if I cannot rely on the legal system, and I mean, of course, we could all make this happen. I'm not saying that it's impossible. I just want to kind of, with this principle of working people in a crypto-native way, it's more of a, let's say, yeah, it's a principle, it's a way of living and working that I want to do. And in this kind of particular paradigm, I cannot enforce NDAs, which means that if I would give someone access to my closed source library and I gave access to an anonymous contributor, then they could either decide to work with me, and that would be really great, or they can, yeah, they can just decide to, so quote unquote, rug pull me and run away with my software and, you know, host it somewhere else and like and do the exact same thing as me and become a competitor and basically ruin my business. So then really there's only two ways of working with external contributors in this like blockchain-y or cryptocurrency way, and that is either through there's probably only one way, that is actually through open source. And that's, now this is a lot of context, for this rug pulled network. But that was basically the problem that led to the idea of a community crawler being born, because I'm thinking this problem of not being able to enforce NDAs with anonymous contributors, I'm speculating that it's a problem of the future that we'll face more and more often, and in especially in DAOs, I think it will become like a really prevalent problem. And so I thought, okay, then we have to somehow address the problem on a technical side, and that we can actually, I think, you know, these are my skills are there for solving that. And so I said, why don't we decentralize the bread and butter of the website, which is the crawler itself that picks up on-chain data and delivers it to a database. And then, you know, when you visit my website, rugpullindex.com, you see these charts and a table. And so why don't we decentralize the process of acquiring that data? And how do we do it? We do it by basically giving people the incentives to deliver me a certain kind of data. So maybe I can say, in this like Oracle network that we are now building, maybe I can say something like, give me for every hour the price of Quikra Zero, which is an Ocean Protocol data set, you know, give me that price in euros every hour. And if you do that, so if someone else, you know, sets up their computer, runs the community crawler website that, you know, checks periodically once an hour and sends the information to me, then what I would do in exchange to pay the person for what they have done, I would send them also some money back. So I would either send them, I don't know, USDC or I mean, also Ocean seems to be a very reasonable choice, or any kind of other cryptocurrency. And through that, because now, so suddenly then, you know, we are hollowing out the value of my website, and we are shifting the value of it really onto like this network where different people can run a node, and where also the guarantees on the reliability and robustness of, you know, receiving this data periodically is enforced through the network, and ideally is also incentivized through the network. And that I, at one point, maybe either I just run the website, or in even a better scenario, everyone can just kind of like click together their own, you know, maybe there's like a client for the rug pulled network that works in a similar fashion to, let's say, the Bloomberg terminal. And, you know, they can load up their wallet with 100 Ocean or whatever, and then they want to track five different prices of five different data sets. Then they just click it together, they launch these bounties, they say, you know, for the next 24 hours I want to see the prices in this and that resolution. And and if they are lucky and there's a miner that can actually deliver this data, then it will show up on the dashboard. And in that case, the benefits for me are that I don't have to run a website anymore, I don't have to pay bills in fiat currency anymore, I don't have to have a closed source backend, and I can just talk to people on eye level and not like as a, let's say, an employer or in a contractor relationship. And yeah, I think also through a network, I think things would start to become much more robust, because networks have tendency of like overcompensating through redundancy. So maybe instead of just, you know, one person submitting these data feeds, there would be like 100. And so that's, of course, much better than just me reporting on this data. You know, I can make mistakes, I need to sleep, all of these things.
Yeah, I mean, it's really fascinating as a concept, right? Like, you basically have rug pull index, and from there you're surfacing some information from the blockchain, and you're, you know, providing that in graphs or whatever. And really the idea is kind of adding the networked layer to the back end, so that now you're not just surfacing, you know, these two pieces of information, you're actually creating the infrastructure where anyone can come along, like all of these contributors who are already coming up to you and just basically plugging into that network, providing you with a data feed, and then basically getting some funding in return. So, I mean, that concept is super, super deep, super rich, and very fascinating. It does lead me to one question, which you're welcome to kind of tackle at any sort of level that you feel comfortable with. But I can imagine that there is a number of interesting technical kind of considerations or challenges that would need to be overcome in order to enable something like this. Can you maybe just address or highlight the one, or, you know, maybe just the one that kind of is at top of mind for you right now in terms of actually the first kind of piece of the puzzle that really needs to be moved in order to kind of pursue this direction further?
Yeah, there's actually a couple of very interesting or also very challenging technical problems with that approach. The rug pulled, in a way, I think conceptually it's very interesting to peer-to-peer oracles that put price on on-chain. So I think Chainlink and Band Protocol with their price feeds for DeFi applications, I think they are already doing something that I think is very similar to what we might also want to do in a first version. But on a, let's say, on a very high level, what we want, and what I think there is a, if we were able to achieve that, it would be a really beneficiary thing, is that if we could guarantee the quality of data that a buyer gets transferred to, that would be really awesome. So you have to think of it in, I think also in like the blockchain-y way. You know, you can design a blockchain or a peer-to-peer network in any kind of way you want. You can, it's not mandated that you, or written in stone that, for example, a transaction is finalized within like 13 times 35 as in the Ethereum network, and that, you know, it's atomic, meaning it, you know, once it's being written, it's, you know, written and it does not leave any side effects. Or, you know, that, you know, there's a kind of like an agreement that if you pay a high enough gas fee, that, you know, you have some sort of economic or statistical agreement that your transaction gets into the block and also gets on top of the transaction pool. All of these things, when Bitcoin and Ethereum were, but mainly when Bitcoin was launched, they were new. And Bitcoin really just nailed these qualities. Like, they could have been built in any other way. Like, for example, I mean, compare those things to PayPal. You know, PayPal is just a money transmitting website, but for example, it doesn't have the concept of, you know, bidding on you know, how fast your transaction gets included or gets executed, because it, I think, for example, PayPal just says all transactions are equal or whatever. So, and in the same way, I think when we build new software, and especially when we build this kind of like very innovative software where we don't really know what we want, it's always important, or yeah, it's important to have kind of like a thesis of what people might want or what can create kind of value. And in the case of a data economy, I think I definitely agree with, let's say, everyone at the Ocean Protocol that, you know, a good way of pricing a data set is something that is really valuable. And so the using automated market makers to determine the price of an ERC20 token that represents actually the access to a data set, it's actually a really cool innovation. But on the other hand, for example, Ocean Protocol has no guarantee, or almost no, I think it has no guarantee, about the delivery of the data. So, for example, unless I'm missing something, the way, for example, how the data is being published on the Ocean Protocol is by, you give an HTTP link to your server, and then once someone sends buys the token and sends it to you in a data set sale, so to speak, then the HTTP endpoint is exposed and you can download the server. And you could argue that the price reflects the quality and the uptime of the server as well. You could argue that, definitely. But the fact of the matter is that the Ocean Protocol itself, on a technical level, does not provide any guarantees on either, you know, whether the server is online, whether the server sends you the right kind of data, whether, you know, the data, maybe, you know, the server is sending you the data, but it's actually not what you think it was, or it's just zeros, or, you know, it's just like zeros on a binary level, or, yeah, it's whatever, I don't know, could literally be that someone just multiplied all the data fields of the numeric values by pi or whatever, so it looks still valid, but it's not. And that's kind of the mindset that I'm approaching, and that we are approaching rug pulled network, because for us, we think that it's most important that you get an extremely strong guarantee that what you buy is what you, or what you buy is what you get. So if you are buying the price of USDC to Ether on the Uniswap pool in 1 hour, then we want to have a 99.9% chance that this is the datum that gets delivered to you. And if not, then we want to have someone feel the consequences, and that being, yeah, either we slash the person that has provided you with this false information, or, you know, maybe we slash their, like, I don't know, would slash somehow their stake or whatever, or we would ban them from, you know, committing, you know, further selling the price feed and so on. So yeah, on top of, so like the biggest technical challenge on the rug pull network that is on top of my head is how can we make sure that the data feed that you are buying is the most accurate, best possible data feed. And that, on a technical level, I think it has been practically solved, but I think the solutions are not super elegant. But what I've so far seen is that, for example, on Chainlink, kind of there is like this bidding process. So for a given data feed, someone just says to whoever delivers me the valid price of USDC to Ether in 1 hour, I'm giving that person, you know, I don't know, 0.1 Ether. And then what is happening is that like hundreds of people maybe are submitting certain prices. And then what Chainlink is doing is it creates like an aggregate. So it creates like, for example, it checks the median value or the average value, and it picks the submission that is closest to the median value. Or that, so that would be one approach. So we are picking something that is the middle of all submissions. But of course, that would be then subject to collusion. So let's say if you had like 10 people submitting the data source and they all talk to each other and say, let's all collude to, you know, commit like that the price is 1, then the average would also be 1. And somewhat everyone would get rewarded, but the price would still be wrong. And that, I think, was also, that was kind of a problem that Chainlink had faced. I think there is a mixed, there is a way to circumvent this by playing two groups, by just fragmenting submission in two groups and having the one group play the other group. So there is always like, there's kind of like this, yeah, almost like a prisoner's dilemma where, you know, if one group colludes and says something wrong, then the other group will put them into jail and vice versa. I think that was proposed some, I don't know, it's very high level what Chainlink has done in their version 2, I think. Another approach that's very interesting is what Numerai Signal is doing, and in general I think is a very Numerai-ish idea, where each person that is providing a data feed would, along with providing the actual data itself, would always stake some amount of money on the data, and this amount of money would reflect their confidence in the correctness of the data that they have submitted. And then based on that confidence, we would choose. So let's say if two people had submitted and one person, you know, said my confidence is $1,000 and another person said, you know, my confidence is $1, then I think you would take, you know, for 99.9%, you would use the value of the person that submitted with $1,000. Actually, not exactly that percentage value, but, and then you would only use, you know, the $1 value of a percentage of roughly 0.01%. So that is another option. And, you know, Numerai is doing it in a very interesting way, because basically on Numerai you can only stake with Numerair, which is their token. And so if everyone would collude and stake them and, you know, stake with confidence on Numerair, then they would fuck themselves over, because, you know, then Numerai would be worthless because it's not functioning as a system. And because everyone has been staked with Numerai, those Numerai, I think at one point then the market will also realize, yeah, but, you know, if Numerai doesn't work, then Numerai is not worth anything. So we can also sell it. So the people that basically are staking and gaining from cheating the system would ultimately, I think, also get punished by just like staking and holding the token. So that's, I think, approach number two. And I think, you know, there is like different combinations of these approaches. I think, let's say, a novelty that we are anticipating with rug pulled network is also that we want to make an extremely good job at identifying a data source. So let's say, who's gonna be the president of the United States is, I think, a very difficult thing to define or to specify or to identify as a data point, because how would you, like, who would you ask? You know, in the end, like, I think you would somehow to witness who's going to be the president. I mean, I'm not American, so US American, so I really don't know on a legal perspective how this would work, but I would guess that you would have to be at the inauguration and would have to see it with your own eyes to understand who is the next president. Or let's say you would have to somehow look at all the different, you know, votes and conclude it from there on. So that's a very difficult data point to identify, I would say. But on the other hand, the spot price of a balancer V1 pool, you know, that features on one side the Lumstar 42 data token and on the other side the Ocean Protocol ERC20 token, at, you know, on the 5th of January at, you know, 5 p.m. Central European time, that is a data point that we can concretely identify. We can, like, it's a number of strings being put together. You know, we know it's on Ethereum, we know the chain ID, we know the contract, we know how the JSON RPC endpoint works, and additionally we can even, like, confirm this kind of data point by recomputing the Merkle proof of that block that we were looking for this data. So we can not only identify that this data, like, we can not only point to this exact data point, but we can also identify. And these are the pieces that in the beginning we will need to establish a network with very strong guarantees for data. So I think rug pulled will not be usable for any kind of data trading or any kind of data feeds, but really only for data feeds where the actual datums, so the individual pieces of data, can be uniquely identified within some kind of computer network. So Ethereum chain is good. I think any kind of like API is great. Anything digital, I think, is good.
I very clearly understand that, you know, abstract, non-computer related data sources that are open to interpretation are going to be really hard to justify. Yeah. And then, you know, something that's more concrete, specifically something with, you know, like a tried and true blockchain that's been operational for a number of years is a lot more concrete. Am I right in assuming, though, with that architecture, so I can understand how you would continue to maybe, you know, set up a node that's checking that data source that you have built yourself or whatever, and obviously you can have high guarantees of its quality or the quality of the feed. But doesn't that defeat the purpose of kind of decentralizing it over time anyway? Or, you know, is this like an interim fix, or is there something that I'm missing that would enable, you know, that approach to expand in an open network without the need to have, you know, like a single source of truth that you come back and compare it to?
I think, yeah, that's a good question. So I agree that, so I think we need to categorize data feeds then into two categories. One is where you can identify and validate the source. And I think the other one is one that you cannot, that where you can only identify, but validating becomes a bit of a challenge. I think,
yeah.
So, and just to give examples, I think the one where, you know, we are able to validate a data source would be the Ethereum network, when we want to have the automated market maker price of Loomstar 42 or whatever. That's very easy to validate, or like quote unquote very easy to validate.
Relatively easily.
Whereas, yeah. Relatively, yeah. Whereas I think it's also still hugely complicated. But for anything that's I think I'm definitely not the best person to speak to this probably. But I know that, for example, the Chainlink founder, he defines this kind of concept of, you know, identifying truth but not necessarily being able to validate it. I think as defined truth. And I think I agree with that vision or idea that I guess it's technically possible to also buy and sell data that where you cannot be absolutely sure whether or not they reflect the truth or not. But for those, I think the mechanisms for pricing and delivering the data feed, I think they are rather challenging. So, like, for example, much earlier, before all of this hype in the space that started in 2020 or whatever, there were also prediction markets. And I think they did kind of the same thing. They were also asking these impossible to answer questions on a blockchain. So they were also doing like a bet who would become like the president of the United States. And then, you know, some people betted on this, some people betted on that. And the assumption was that, you know, in the end, the prediction market always gets the answer right or whatever. And I don't know if it actually worked out. I think there was some really difficult questions that were asked in the end. Like, I think the president thing worked out well, but I remember one case in Kleros that is also this sort of like arbitration platform that is doing a very similar, you know, that where they are seeking basically the truth through like game theory games or whatever. I don't know, the devil is so much in the detail that sometimes also for a certain, you know, data feed that you want, I think it's nearly impossible to answer it like in a definite way. And I think I want to avoid going down that rabbit hole in the first place. I think also to double down on that, I think I want to stay practical right now with the community crawler, because as I mean, I have told here in this interview, it can have a huge scope if you want, but I intentionally framed it, and I'm only doing this because I have a real problem. And the real problem is that I cannot put anonymous people under NDA. So I'm not really committed or married to the idea of solving the vision that I've laid out as much more to solving the actual real-life problem, which is that I need data on-chain, and I run a website, and I have people that are working for me, and I have a closed-source backend, and I don't want to have that. I want everyone to be able to kind of co-run my website with me. And yeah, whatever serves the purpose of solving this problem will eventually become the rug pull network. And so I think, because, you know, I think the problem always with like technical visions and so on, it's always that we are idolizing a certain way of doing things and so on, whereas the actual solution is always so messy and so like there's so many weird details that in the end they never really equate what you originally planned for. And yeah, I think that's important. So basically, I think you were asking kind of this question if it wouldn't defeat the purpose of being decentralized when we can validate the data. I think, you know, already if I don't have to have the responsibility in 1 year or so of being the administrator of the website, of having a closed source code base and so on, then I'm already happy. So for example, when we can scale the crawl, where we have different data points that we can crawl, when, you know, other people are running my website, so there's a redundancy, so if my server goes down, the website isn't down and so on. All these things, if we accomplish, you know, only a minor fraction of those, I think would be quite a success.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, those nitty-gritty details can lead you astray. As you were sort of talking, I was thinking about it, and no. You know, it's at scale, if you have enough people active and engaged, then presumably you reduce the chance of it being led astray, because there's sort of more eyes on it. Obviously you've got, you know, social layers like people acting in good faith, etc. So there's things you can do, and you know, it's contextual as well. You know, if you were engaging with someone for rug pull indexes data feeds, for example, and they started sending you a whole bunch of garbage, then, you know, presumably, you know, they wouldn't continue to send that for much longer, or at least it wouldn't continue to influence the information that was on the website for much longer.
Yeah. But I think definitely one of the things I want to make sure is that I don't have to be the police that checks all of the data feeds and all of the stuff, but that like the network takes care of it and automates it basically. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, is there anything that you would advise people looking to get more involved with on-chain data? So, you know, through Ocean Missions, I've been speaking to a few people who are, you know, they're developers or they're data scientists, and you know, they have experience with Python and whatnot, but interacting with, you know, extracting information from the Ethereum blockchain or whatever is new to them. Is there any sort of, you know, practical advice? So, you know, say I'm a developer and I have the skills to do it, but just, you know, what is the best way to go in and start pulling information from the blockchain?
I have one. It's a very specific advice, I would say, but maybe something I've learned with rug pull index, which is that I think you should always go for controlling your own infrastructure. So if you crawl data on Ethereum, then get an Ethereum full node, pay the cost, rent the server, you know, do all of those things yourself, because you will be, you know, happy for, you know, being able to go into the node and run commands and maybe, you know, kill it and restart it, or, you know, clean out some of the database if in case, you know, there's a fork or something. And don't rely on other services that, you know, they have fancy things written on their websites and whatever, and, you know, they're like, yeah, we have this and that uptime. Don't rely on those. Also don't, like, do things yourself. Like, don't use huge libraries. Use, like, if you can do it yourself, you know, if you can code a script that can do a certain thing, do it yourself. Unless, of course, you know, don't roll your own crypto, don't build your own calendar. But apart from that, I think a benefit of you know, doing things yourself, because if you have control, you also have a quicker turnaround when things go wrong. Because you can just log in, you can fix the problem, you can look into most of the source code on open source. You know, people are very helpful. Whereas, you know, when you use hosted services, maybe they push an update Sunday morning and they fuck up your website, and then, you know, you have to get up and, you know, do what they have done, and you know, you're not going to be happy. And so I think the more kind of you, so that's how rug pull index also is run, is like, we, like, the most of our infrastructure we are running ourselves, so we have an Ethereum node, and yeah, we really try to not be reliant on any other kind of data sources, because all of those can go down and like things can happen, and, or, you know, APIs change and blah blah blah. So yeah, I have like now Rugpull Index, for example, it's a privilege to focus also on the Rugpull network, because really there just has to be no maintenance on the Rugpull website. I mean, the crawler has been running since we are eliminating most of the external data sources and everything, and since we have tested everything. I don't know, the last time I had to restart the crawler or do some database maintenance was probably like 2 months ago. So I'm like, the website is online, it works, that's it. Like, sometimes I don't even look like for a day and still everything works and so on. So there's really a, it's counterintuitive, especially as I think as a junior, I would have never advised this kind of thing. But now that I've made the experience, I think, yeah, there's a lot of value in having control over the things you, over the quality of service you want to deliver.
Awesome.
So that,
yeah. I think that's really good advice. So for people listening, you know, if they are interested in getting more involved with Rugpull Index as it is today, or, you know, you mentioned that there's the GitHub there and also potentially interested in learning more about the Rugpull network, where is the best place for them to keep up to date with what's going on?
I think our website is a good starting point, rugpullindex.com. There is also the Discord icon where you can join our chat and you can be active in the channel there. We have, I think, a fairly active GitHub organization, so we are maintaining a bunch of projects that I think can be used in production. So we have a library for querying the Ethereum, an Ethereum full node on the JSON RPC. It's called ETHFUN, and it's basically similar to Ethos.js or Web3. Then we also now, we have, like, for example, a library on Solidity for, creating a sparse Merkle tree that is gas effective. We have a library, you know, where you can generate our pricing charts using SVG. We have done some, research on rollups and so on. And of course, we are in progress of building the Rugpull network. And that's also just a repo on our GitHub right now. If you want to technically contribute, then I am writing a lot of blog posts. And so if you visit rugpullindex.com/blog, basically since the very beginning of the project, I have written blog posts very frequently on all sorts of topics. And for example, if you are interested in being a project on the Ocean DAO, then I think a lot of insight might be in those posts, because I've just like made it my task of journaling all my thinking there. I also have a blog. It's called timdaub.github.io, and it's my personal blog where I blog about all sorts of things crypto related. But I would be very happy, I think, if you really want to start working with us, for example, want to contribute, if you want to just like learn more or something, then I think the best tangible way is if you come on our Discord, chat a bit, and then I think we can get started on whatever you want to explore.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you so much for your time, Tim. We have gone well and truly over the planned half hour, but it's been a very, very interesting conversation as per usual. And looking forward to seeing how things progress and, keeping an eye on it. So definitely go and check out rugpullindex.com and you'll see a link up there to the Discord and get involved and find out more. Thanks for listening to the Ocean Missions Campfire podcast. If you'd like to get started with on-chain data analysis, head over to oceanmissions.com and check out the work that we're doing there. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to like and subscribe, and also feel free to share a review. It helps with the podcast getting found, so that other people can listen to it too. Thanks so much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you again.